the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slam of pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up.
Tell your friends, tell your family, tonight is the night. Pancakes and Power Slams, we are live on the air. I am Chris Featherstone from Crave Wrestling. Derek Arbor, our correspondent, will be on the air soon, giving us the Raw recap. Ladies and gentlemen, let's shoot it straight here. Thank you so much. This is episode number 75. 75 episodes. Thank you so much for continuing to support us here on Pancakes and Power Slams. But I'm going to be honest with you. We need your support. Tell your family, tell your friends, tell everybody you know about Pancakes and Power Slams. Ladies and gentlemen, we're looking to go to greater heights. We're I'm in talks with a very famous former wrestler and former WWE wrestler, currently he's still wrestling, the biggest interview to date, and just in talks with more people, with more very reputable stars. Of course, we've had Elijah Burke, we've had Crimson, we've had Caprice Coleman, as well as indie star Onyx, and I'm looking forward to further episodes, 75 episodes, 75 weeks. It's just amazing, and I just want to thank everyone for continuing their support. 347-884-8452 is the number to call live. Tweet at Crave Wrestling. And, of course, get into the chat room for random wrestling talk and to answer the trivia questions. Speaking of trivia questions, the first trivia question we have is, name two members of the WCW tag team known as the Skyscrapers. Name two members known as the Skyscrapers. But like I'm saying, continue your support, CraveWrestling@gmail.com. Of course, Crave Wrestling, Twitter at Crave Wrestling, like Crave Wrestling on Facebook, and of course, Bleacher Report and WrestlingInc.com is where I write for, where you can find me. Any product, if you want your music advertised, if you want your product advertised, like I said, you know, there is a very, very large fan base that we reach to every week, and you will be guaranteed to have your product expanded by partnering with us, partnering with Crave Wrestling. Like I said, CraveWrestling@gmail.com. Let us know what you want to push, and if the conversation is right, we will go ahead and make it happen for you. Thank you, everyone who's emailing me for different opportunities to be on different shows, and I got an email to be on an excerpt for a new book that's being written. So continue to show your support, and again, thank you so much. Other people emailing me to partner with them for their shows. So continue to show your support. Thank you very much. Let everybody know, Pancakes and Power Slams, we are in it to win it. Tuesday nights, 11 p.m. Eastern Time. We are live. Again, two members of the Skyscrapers. And until we get the right answer, let's get to Raw. First, start off with a Triple H and Randy Orton in-ring promo. Interrupted by Daniel Bryan. And then Triple H books Daniel Bryan versus Big Show for the main event. Now, I'm appreciating what I see with the corporate angle, okay? The problem is with that, and I've expressed this before, and I've actually talked to Derek about this before off air, but before they had, they're trying to mimic the whole corporation thing. Of course, Daniel Bryan's the big target. He's the baby face, similar to Stone Cold Steve Austin, 98, 99. I respect it. I think it's probably one of the best angles that the WWE has had in a number of years. However, here's the problem I have with this. Every week, Raw and SmackDown, Daniel Bryan is beat up. He's the one who's down every week. Now, I'm a fan of slow builds. I appreciate slow builds. However, my problem is every week Daniel Bryan getting beat up and being on the mat is just not good. Now, again, you're comparing this to Stone Cold Steve Austin, 98-99, and Austin was completely opposite of that. Most of the time, he was getting the advantage over Vince McMahon, whether if it's a stunner, whether if it's a, you know, spraying McMahon's and Kurt Angle with a milk truck, with the beer truck. Just a number of things of why Steve Austin had the advantage just about every week. That's what drew the ratings. That's what drew the money. When Steve Austin had the advantage, because people were so fascinated in the character of Steve Austin, similar to the organic chance that Daniel Bryan has with the Yes, people are into Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan does not need to be built up to be the star. People they're naturally supportive of Daniel Bryan, so he doesn't have to be on his back every week to get a proper build for this angle. Now, I do understand that he's, you know, quote, the B-plus player, and he has to earn his way. I understand that. But to put him on his back every week, not a big fan of. Again, go in the chat room, 347-884-8452 is the number to call live. Tweet at Crave Wrestling with your questions or comments. Miz defeats Fandango. Throwaway match. It seems like there's going to be a partial feud with them after the SummerSlam antics that we saw. Miz was the host. Fandango interrupted him and got hit. That was funny. But I'm glad that this isn't going too far. My biggest hope would be for Miz to actually reunite his team with the Big Show, since Mark Henry is injured. He injured himself at a house show, pulled his hamstring, so he's going to be out for a little bit. So I would like to see the Show Miz reunion, and I would like to see that as baby faces to go against the Shield. I don't see why those two won't be good. I mean, they're already involved in the angle, which is good. And I do think that having them go against the Shield will be good. Because, to be honest with you, every member of the Shield needs to drop the title. I mean, Romans and Reigns, they had, you know, some match. They had a decent feud with the Usos, but that was it. As far as Dean Ambrose, he had one match against Rob Van Dam at a pre-show at SummerSlam. Nothing ever came from that, and he just has been a lousy U.S. champion. I mean, I understand that, you know, he's in an angle now, but at the same time, that should not take away from what we need to see. People need to defend the titles. It doesn't matter what angle you're in. That's why I'm very upset that the Intercontinental title is on Curtis Axel, and we'll get there soon as far as booking their match. We'll get there soon as far as why I'm upset with Curtis Axel retaining the title. I've mentioned that before, but it bears repetition. Right back to feature Dolph Ziggler. Ziggler was attacked by Dean Ambrose before the match. People were thinking that Dean Ambrose was going to be the opponent for Ryback, for Dolph Ziggler. However, Ryback was the opponent. His music comes on after the attack, kind of, you know, prances down. Now, I will say this. I'm not a Ryback fan. I used to be for a short period of time, for probably a few months. And then having the Shield beat him up all the time and not being able to win the title from CM Punk, that really, really hurt him. And his heel run hasn't done anything. He beat Jericho. What does that really mean these days? I mean, this is coming from a Jericho fan, but that didn't really mean much. Ryback beating Jericho, I think it was Money in the Bank. It was Money in the Bank. He goes against John Cena at consecutive pay-per-views. One was a no contest. The other was a loss. So he hasn't really earned his stripes as a heel either. So the Ryback character altogether is a failure. It's a failure. And I definitely think that he needs to be not necessarily repackaged, because the Ryback character is marketable. Feed Me More actually got over. People were chanting Feed Me More. It really got over. However, the big guy thing is funny. You know, he kind of comes down just, you know, real pompous, and that's funny, but that leads to nothing. Ryback is still he's not being utilized properly, and there's really no direction with him. So Ryback needs to, if they really want to invest in Ryback's future, something needs to happen pronto. Now, the upside of Dolph Ziggler, though, because his babyface run has been kind of diminishing. It's been on the lower end of the stock total here. However, I do think there's some promise with Dolph Ziggler, because I do like his involvement in the McMahon feud with the corporation feud. I do like that. I did acknowledge a comment that he made, which led to a match against the Shield, which led to an Ambrose attack. So it looks like we're going to see Dolph Ziggler versus Dean Ambrose at Night of Champions, which that has the potential to be the match of the night. So it's going to be a good match. I really hope that they make it official. It looks like they're heading that way. So that's something to at least look forward to. At least that's some promise. And we'll see if Ambrose loses to Dolph Ziggler, which he should. Like I said, every title should be defended, period. It should not be a prop. It should not just be held just to be held and not defended. And that's what we're getting. We're getting that with the U.S. titles. We're getting that with the Intercontinental titles. We're getting it with the tag team titles. And so what's the use of having any other title but the world titles if they're not being defended? And to be honest with you, the only thing that has promise with it now is the WWE Championship. You might as well just have one title. I'm a fan of having those titles because I'm a fan of building stars. That's why I think the mid-card titles are some of the most important titles that a company could have, because it builds a star. And, I mean, if you think about all the world champions that first were Intercontinental champions, you got your Bret Harts, your Shawn Michaels, your Rocks, your Steve Austins, your Triple H. That's five people right there, five of the most popular stars in the history of the WWE. all were Intercontinental champions before they were World Heavyweight champions. And so that's kind of like, you know, your pathway to being a top guy. And they should bring that back. They should do that again. And so, you know, Chris Jericho is another one that was Intercontinental champion before he was a World Heavyweight champion. So Booker T is another one who was Intercontinental champion before he was World Heavyweight champion. So there's, as far as WWE is concerned, so there's, they should bring it back. It's very important. It should stay important. And they put the title on Curtis Axel, it seemed like he was going to bring, you know, back some prestige to it. Put it on Ambrose was supposed to mean something, but neither of those title reigns has meant anything. And so hopefully one of these days, hopefully sooner than later, we'll see that. I'm actually going to, you know, we're on this thumbs up and thumbs down series about the flavor of the week. And actually we're going to do another thumbs up. We're, like I told you last week, it's going to be part two in the thumbs up and thumbs down series today on the NWO members, part two of that. But we're going to continue some thumbs up and thumbs down. Next week we're going to do, it's going to be fun, we're going to do Nation of Domination thumbs up or thumbs down series. So join in for that. But further down the road, I got a message to CM Punk, like I said before, and we're also going to talk about the lack of defense, the lack of title defenses for the mid-card titles, including the tag team titles, and we're going to chronicle that and just throw some statistics in there. So 347-884-8452 is the number to call live on air. Let us know your raw thoughts. Or let us know any random question, like who was your favorite faction or who was your favorite Four Horsemen, your favorite Four Horsemen combination, or who was your favorite WWE champion of all time or favorite WCW television champion of all time. Random questions, throw it at us, 347-884-8452. This is an interactive show, lots of fun. Call in. We are live. Let us know your thoughts. Or go in the chat room, of course, at Crave Wrestling on Twitter, to let us know your thoughts there as well. Any type of sponsors, any type of advertisement, if you want your product pushed, you will get some expansion. CraveWrestling@gmail.com, and we will push your product and make sure that you get some more people that supports your product. Next, we have Stephanie McMahon calling out Big Show to the ring, embarrasses him about his current financial state due to him refusing to face Daniel Bryan. I think this segment had some promise to it. There was two things that I noticed that I wasn't a big fan of. One, the Big Show has an ironclad contract per John Laurinaitis. So they kind of played that as if he doesn't have the ironclad contract because it's not enforced by Laurinaitis because he's not there anymore. So it's under new management, so to speak. So it's not ironclad anymore, which I can understand, but the weeping and sobbing and crying and sapping of the Big Show, it has expanded since his first year in the WWE. It is ridiculous. The guy is 7 feet tall. He's billed as 500 pounds. He's a legit bad guy as far as, you know, in the locker room, he can beat anybody up that's in the locker room. Although there has been some stories that he's had some struggles against some people, but you can tell that the big Show can hold his own in the back, and so he's a big, tall, dominant guy. No matter how you slice it, and so why in the world has the WWE from the beginning of time, from the beginning of his career, why has the WWE booked him in many occasions to be this sappy, sobbing crybaby? I mean, if you think, I wrote an article about it on Bleacher Report. I was just fed up with seeing it, and I just felt, you know, compelled to write an article on Bleacher Report today about it, simply titled, "Why Must Big Show Be So Sappy?" And he's very sappy, and I chronicled just most of the moments of times where he just cried just hysterically. 99 when he was booked to 1999 when he was booked to do the Boss Man, when he was booking an angle with the Boss Man, and for some reason they decided to book his deceased father in the storyline, and some crooked cop told Big Show the news in the back, and he started weeping. I mean, I understand in real life, if you found out your father's dead, I mean, that's you could have some expression there, some emotional, some tears and expression. However, I mean, the fact that they would book it in a storyline and actually have the Big Show cry live on air. Guy's 7 feet tall. You know, he was in 95, he was thrown off the bridge by Hulk Hogan, you know, when he was in WCW, and he didn't cry anything with that. And it was just absolutely ridiculous. So that was 99. Let's fast forward to 2012. The whole John Laurinaitis storyline where he made fun of his voice. This was back in May of 2012, May 7th, to be honest, to be exact. In the May 14th show, 2012, he went against Kane, and Kane got the upper hand. Laurinaitis and David Otunga was watching from the sidelines. Laurinaitis comes in the ring, shows tries to save this. Well, he forces Show to say I'm sorry, and he just catches a hissy fit, tries to keep his job. I mean, he cries like a baby, still gets fired. Of course, the good thing about that, at least that had a payoff. At least the payoff was a heel turn, and you know, kind of a security bodyguard for Laurinaitis. Which was originally scheduled to be for Tensai, but Tensai's gimmick bust was an absolute bust from the beginning. People were chanting Albert for his first match against, I believe it was Yoshitatsu. I believe that was his first match, which was pretty odd. But either Yoshitatsu, yeah, I believe it was Yoshitatsu because I think he wrestled Alex Riley, R-Truth. He wrestled just a bunch of mid-carders, and then he wrestled Cena and Punk, and he beat both of them. And they had something going for Tensai, but, yeah, I mean, like, people knew that he was A-Train or Albert or Prince Albert or whatever you want to call him. And you can't, you know, you can't fool the crowd like that. I mean, you can have your Chinese or Japanese, you know, lettering on your head if you want to. That doesn't take away the fact that you're Albert. So it was just a bad altogether, but they replaced it with Big Show, which I can understand. But he cried hysterically to get to that point, which is humiliating. And then he was with AJ. There were some things he had going on with AJ, not as far as relationship-wise, but he was kind of caught. And if it was an episode of SmackDown where he accidentally, like, bumped into her and, you know, she got hurt and he started crying hysterically because AJ was hurt. I mean, really? Really, big guy? You're going to cry on an episode of SmackDown hysterically because AJ's hurt? Ask if she's okay. Make sure she's fine, and don't cry hysterically about it, Mr. 7 foot guy. And that was ridiculous. And then it was another episode on SmackDown in February of 2013, where, well, I think it was It was around February, late January, early February 2013, when he was feuding with Alberto Del Rio. Alberto Del Rio just turned face and beat him at the January 11th SmackDown airing and won the World Heavyweight title from him. And there was an episode on SmackDown where he vandalized his tour bus, took the tires off, and forced Big Show to go in the back. And then he got paint just spilled on him in the bus. And again, he cried hysterically. And of course, yesterday, you know, we'll get to that, another crying episode. So again, reading on Bleacher Report is called Why Must Big Show Be So Sappy? And I also have the videos of those different times that I talked about too. So we got a comment here in the chat room. Maybe he's just a big softy in real life. I doubt it. He doesn't seem like it. I mean, there was like an old Tough Enough episode where Ryan Reeves or Ryback was on there, and he was showing the ropes to everybody, just kind of intimidating people and saying, you know, you got to earn your stripes. And then on that Tough Enough episode, he was like body slamming people really hard. So you could tell that he, you know, he can hold his own, but I don't know. There's some reports that there's some rumors. I've seen some rumors that he lets authorities and higher ups kind of run over him and back. That's why he's just kind of been tossed back and forth, face heel, and really haven't. Here's the thing: the Big Show's been 2-time WWE champion, 2-time World Heavyweight champion, 1-time ECW champion, the first person in history, it's only been 2 people, but the first person in history to ever win the WWE World Heavyweight and ECW Championship. First person in history to do that. CM Punk is the second and only. I mean, it's only been 2. So you've achieved all of these accolades, and you really don't have really a memorable run as your 5 world championships, and he won 2 world championships at WCW. So the guy's been 7-time world champion, including WWE, WCW, and ECW. So with all of that, he still really didn't have a memorable run, and I just don't quite understand. I mean, why they would really book Show to have that type of run since he's been there since 1999. I mean, if they really want to make him, here's what my suggestion would have been. Now, I do appreciate them adding Big Show in the mix. I do. He's at the twilight of his career. I do appreciate that. He has some relevance still. I like it. However, why not have Bray Wyatt feud with the Big Show? Take him out of the corporation angle and have Bray Wyatt and Big Show be the next feud for Bray Wyatt, because we'll get to the Wyatts, and I'm gonna talk a little bit more in depth about the Wyatts as far as where I think they are. But Kane was a victim of the Wyatt family. And then the Big Show can be a victim of the Wyatt family. And so basically Kane, somehow the Wyatts are jumping 2 other people, like the Usos, just 2 throwaway people, maybe like Zack Ryder and Justin Gabriel. And then Kane returns, and then he's still outnumbered because Gabriel and Ryder are knocked out. And then Big Show returns after the Wyatts kind of take him out. And then those 2 can handle the Wyatts, but they're still outnumbered. And then lights go off, the Undertaker comes back. That sets a 6-man matchup for the Royal Rumble. Come on. I mean, how simple can it get? The Wyatt family versus Kane, the Undertaker, and the Big Show. That will be the best thing for for the Wyatts to have, period. And that would absolutely draw big, big money to the Royal Rumble, and it would work. And so I don't understand why they didn't do that. That would have been a better option. But instead, we got to see a 7-foot crying giant. So have fun. Enjoy the 7-foot crying giant. But I'm not. Next, we have the primetime players defeating 3MB. Makes sense. They're pushing primetime players. I think, you know, you would have to be oblivious to see why they're not. This is a family show with moral values here that we won't go further into that. But I think you can read between the lines of why the primetime players are receiving a babyface push out of virtually nowhere, but really somewhere. But I like the primetime players. I think they should. I think they should get a push, and I definitely think that finally, because they were kind of slacking and really just not really being much of a tag team. They're losing all the time, and so this is a good momentum builder for the primetime players. Them as baby faces work, the crowd is behind them, so they're definitely, kudos to the primetime players for having a series of wins, and they may even be the next on deck for a tag team title shot. Who knows? And as far as the no correct answer yet, looks like we have the not a correct answer. Who were two members of the Skyscrapers? There's only been three. Two members of the Skyscrapers. I'm actually going to say the answer because we haven't got the right answer in nearly half an hour. So the Skyscrapers have been Dangerous Danny Spivey, Mean Mark Callis, which is The Undertaker, and Sid Vicious. Those are the three members that's been a part of the Skyscrapers. Different times, but those are the three members who have been Skyscrapers, managed by Teddy Long. Next question. What year was the second Royal Rumble? What year was the second Royal Rumble? Looks like we got that answer already. Congratulations. 1989 is the correct answer. That is the correct answer. The next question is who won the 2000 Royal Rumble? Who won the 2000 Royal Rumble? All right, next we got a Bray Wyatt vignette. Like I said, I'm going to go into how I feel about the Wyatt family. Now, here's the thing. I understand the Kane promo. I understand Kane putting the Wyatt family over. I do understand them doing that. I do understand them putting Kane over. Kane being used for this to put the Wyatt family over. However, I do not like the fact that we're seeing vignettes after vignettes after vignettes of the Wyatt family with absolutely no direction. Where in the world, after Kane, because Kane's gone, and now we just have more. I mean, he's explaining Sister Abigail. Now, don't get me wrong, Bray Wyatt has came light years from Husky Harris. I mean, just a transformation. Looks like he's lost some weight. He's always been a good wrestler to me. I've liked his ring work, but just the hair grown, the beard grown, just his mic work is just impeccable. But that's all you get. It's not really much of a direction. Rowan and Harper, I mean, I followed Luke Harper in the Indies when he was Brody Lee, and he's not bad. I mean, he's not a bad big guy. He's very agile. He's quick. He's put on some good matches with some, you know, some names that you're familiar with. However, Eric Rowan's decent. You know, I followed him a little bit, did some bit of research, and knew that, you know, he wrestled before, you know, crossed out of the country and things of that nature. But I don't see anything in the Wyatt family right now that's captivating enough that's keeping me wanting to know about them. And I definitely don't think that showing vignettes week after week after week is going to help them whatsoever. They need someone to wrestle. They need someone to go against. They need someone to have an angle with. And so my question is, who's the next person to start a feud with the Wyatt family? It just seems like there's nobody, even if they had someone to target before they had Kane. But now their vignettes are just showing, you know, Kane, they took out Kane, and now what? So I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan of the Wyatt family. You know, it's subject to ridicule. You know, there's so many people who are hanging on the Wyatt family's thread, you know, every thread that the Wyatt family says, and hanging on every word that the Wyatt family says, that Bray Wyatt says. I'm not totally counting them out. I'm definitely not counting them out whatsoever. However, with the pulse of the WWE universe, with the lack of patience that many fans have, something, and like I said, a slow build, I can understand, I like it. However, you need a target. You need a target. The Wyatt family needs a target, period. And so the Big Show would have been a good target, but now who's, you know, chat room, you know, help me out. Feel free to call in. Feel free to go in the chat room. Feel free to tweet, but you know who would be a good person to feud against the Wyatts right now? Let us know your thoughts. All right, next we get Randy Orton defeating Cody Rhodes. We got a suggestion here. The Shield in the chat room. I don't think so, because heel versus heel. Is not, it doesn't get over. There's not been any big, the only heel versus heel feud that I can think of that actually went to a pay-per-view was SummerSlam 92, Shawn Michaels versus Rick Martel, and I believe the stipulation was they couldn't even hit each other in the face. It was just a weird stipulation, and it was a weird match, and it was a weird angle, and they were both heels. And just heel versus heel doesn't really get over much. Face versus face gets over, but not really heel versus heel. And I don't think that the Shield would work, because the Shield's in a really good spot right now. I like the Shield spot. Their stock was diminishing a little bit, but now they have a better spot being, you know, kind of the big boss man. Rest in peace, the big boss man times three, kind of like the enforcer security role for the corporation, similar to boss man back in the late 90s. So I like the Shield. I like where the Shield's at right now. They need to drop the titles. They don't even need to defend the titles. They need to drop them. They don't need to have the titles to defend, because each one of them without a title and having a more of a security mercenary role would be a better, it is a better spot for them, because even with the titles, they were starting to diminish and lose, and I think this is a good spot for them. So I wouldn't put the Shield in there because it would just be two heels going at it, and it would just be really weird. It seems like Kane being targeted was a good idea. Now, they should have made Kane look more impressive. They should have made him more intimidating, because Kane is not very intimidating anymore. However, I definitely think that the Big Show would have been a good option, minus all the crying. Again, who won the 2000 Royal Rumble? Who won the 2000 Royal Rumble? I got one answer, not in the chat room, but I got one answer here that is not correct. So next, like I said, Randy Orton versus Cody Rhodes. That was a really another answer. The Big Show. No, that is incorrect. The Big Show has never won the Royal Rumble. let's see. And next we have Randy Orton versus Cody Rhodes. Good match. Fantastic match. Fantastic, fantastic match. I really like what they're doing with Cody Rhodes. Now, reports say that he was written off because, good job, chat room, yes. The Rock did win the 2000 Royal Rumble. Good job, chat room. But it was a great job with what they're doing with Cody Rhodes. I like him. He was starting to the stock started to decline as a babyface because he beat Damian Sandow. Speaking of Damian Sandow, we'll get to him on SmackDown. We talk about SmackDown. This guy is being booked horribly to have won the Money in the Bank. We'll get to that a little bit later. But to beat Damian Sandow and then to go and lose against Curtis Axel and just the Randy Orton, I understand that you had to lose against Randy Orton, but it was a firing angle. But the crowd in Des Moines, Iowa on Raw was really, really behind Cody Rhodes. Cody Rhodes chants, and he has the potential. I really hope that the WWE does not drop the ball with Cody Rhodes. He has the potential to be a phenomenal babyface. He has the potential to be a top guy. And I definitely think that when we saw, you know, he lost, and so he was quote-unquote fired, which actually is just his honeymoon. He's getting married, and he needs to he's taking time off of his honeymoon. So reportedly, WWE Creative aren't really doing well communicating, and so they just kind of had to throw that together. So, but it'll turn off for the better, though. It'll turn off for the better, because I definitely think that Cody Rhodes has the potential to be in the World Heavyweight title picture. And when he comes back, I think that he'll have that momentum. He had the momentum from the Randy Orton match. It was a very good match. And I definitely think that he has the potential to be a top babyface. And they need top babyfaces. Cena's gone. Sheamus is gone. Christian's just wallowing in Nowhereville now after a few of Alberto Del Rio. Jericho's gone. Orton's a heel now. So they need the babyface. The only thing you have is the only person you have is Daniel Bryan. Kane's gone. Big Show is just kind of floundering a little bit. And then of course you have Dolph Ziggler, who's kind of trying to build himself back up. So you really don't have a face for SmackDown. And I definitely think that Cody Rhodes could and should be that face for SmackDown. So I'm liking what they're doing with Cody right now. I like what I saw yesterday on Raw with him losing and him getting storyline fired. and he'll come back and have a lot of momentum. So I'm a fan of it. Cody Rhodes also cut a pretty cool promo about his family. He talked about, you know, he's a Hall of Fame. He talked about his dad being a legendary wrestler, and he comes to WWE, you know, being forced to wear polka dots, and then, you know, he said that his brother, you know, was the natural, and then they put gold paint on him, and he's never been the same since. And so, good mic work with Cody Rhodes. I like it. It's shades of him really getting a chance to hone in his character and become a top guy. CM Punk in-ring promo, it didn't really do anything but to just build up the handicap match. I think I'm going to spend this time now to talk about what I don't like about the handicap match. Now, I do understand. I do get it. I get it. It's a filler feud for CM Punk, Paul Heyman. Curtis Axel is not a good choice because I don't think Curtis Axel is over. However, with Paul Heyman, I think Axel can work. It hasn't been a horrible feud. It hasn't been a horrible program, but to come off of Brock Lesnar, to come from that to Curtis Axel, I mean, it's like Brock Lesnar, Curtis Axel. And it's a big dive to me, but at least there's some type of decency with it, with having Paul Heyman being involved in the feud as well. So the whole elimination thing, I understand it. It's a filler feud. I'm not totally against it, but I think the problem with that is that the Intercontinental title is not going to be up for grabs at Night of Champions. Why not? The Night of Champions should be the Night of Champions. Curtis Axel is the Intercontinental Champion. So unless Curtis Axel, what makes sense, which they should do this, Night of Champions is the 15th, I believe. So you've got 2 weeks. What they should do is they should have someone, anyone, that's worthy of becoming Intercontinental Champion, they should have CM Punk. They should have CM Punk cost Curtis Axel the Intercontinental Championship next week. They should have someone beat Curtis Axel for the Intercontinental Championship and defend it. Defend it at Night of Champions, because the Intercontinental Championship means absolutely nothing right now. Absolutely nothing. It has had not any type of contribution to the CM Punk and Paul Heyman Curtis Axel feud. He hasn't defended it in nearly 2 months. I mean, whatever happened to the old school 30-day rule that you couldn't rest, you know, you couldn't defend the title in 30 days, you'd be stripped from it. What happened to that? We need that again, because he hasn't defended it since mid-July. And you know, he won it in June. So to have the belt for almost 3 months, he has definitely done absolutely nothing to build the prestige or the awareness of the Intercontinental title. So he needs to drop it. He needs to drop it soon. It would make sense if CM Punk cost him the title, cost him next week, someone defends it. I don't care if it's The Miz. I don't care if it's Kofi Kingston. You know, they always throw him. They always throw belts on Kofi Kingston. They throw mid-card titles on Kofi Kingston all the time. That's why he has like a dozen mid-card championship runs. So they can always do that and have Kofi Kingston defend it against Fandango. You know, at Night of Champions or someone, a gauntlet match, something Intercontinental title related. So draws the title off with Curtis Axel, have him lose against Kofi Kingston, and that could actually help the feud. That can actually help the angle because CM Punk will get leverage by defeating help causing Curtis Axel to lose. That would be my best. That would be the best option, in my opinion, to help the mid-card title. As far as the U.S. title, looks like we are going to have Dolph Ziggler versus Dean Ambrose, so at least that's being showcased in some capacity. So, not a fan of what they're doing with the Intercontinental title. And Curtis Axel, like I said, Brock Lesnar, Curtis Axel. Next we have Naomi versus Natalya versus Brie Bella, showcase of the E! Total Divas cast, three members of the E! Total Divas cast. Made sense for AJ to interfere. I like that they're going to have a four-way match, a fatal four-way match at Night of Champions, which has been officially been signed. I'm okay with it. I think all three of them should have some type of involvement in the title hunt. I'm cool. Brie Bella, Natalya, Naomi, they all have proven themselves in the ring. And I think going against AJ in the fatal four-way match would be a good idea. So I was actually fine with the outcome of that. And then finally we get Daniel Bryan versus The Big Show. Basically, he tried to throughout the show he tried to refuse going into. And we got Damian Sandow versus Rob Van Dam, and again, that was just not. It didn't mean anything. Rob Van Dam again defeats Damian Sandow. Sandow unfortunately gets the unfortunate treatment of just not being over. I mean, for some reason they decided to make Sandow Money in the Bank winner. For what? That it didn't do much of anything. And Damian Sandow is having a very unimpressive winning streak. And to make him Mr. Money in the Bank, I mean, I understand that you can't have a sudden winning streak if you are known for losing just because you won a case on a ladder, okay? The last 2 years we saw that. 2011, Daniel Bryan won. 2012, Dolph Ziggler won. Great comment here in the chat room. There should be a match that he loses it as a stipulation. I totally agree with that. Because he's not even proven himself to be a reputable world title contender. The last 2 years, the last two winners of the World Heavyweight Championship Money in the Bank case, 2011 was Daniel Bryan, 2012 was Dolph Ziggler. They both had quite embarrassing win-loss records on the way to cashing the title win. But at least they were quality world title contenders. Damian Sandow has not proven himself whatsoever to be a world title contender. And unfortunately, when he cashes it in, it's not really going to mean much if he cashes it in anytime soon. So he needs to build himself up to become a top guy, because if he cashes that in, if he cashes that in now, it would be a defamation to the World Heavyweight Championship, and we've already gotten that for the past few years. I mean, Sheamus was a decent champion. Big Show, Alberto Del Rio has been absolutely stale as a champion. Randy Orton and Christian feuded back 2 years ago. That was a good feud, but Christian won. And had it for a very short time, but they had some good matches. But really, I mean, if you think about it, the past few years, the WWE Championship has not really been, like I've said before in other shows, it used to be the legitimate 1A title. You had the WWE title, and then a close second, you had the World Heavyweight Championship. It was even to the point where it was it was defended last at WrestleMania's. Remember when The Undertaker had it? He defended it. I believe it was Kevin Batista. Was a WrestleMania main event for the title. And Taker and Edge was a title match at WrestleMania for the World Heavyweight Championship. But I believe Taker Batista. You have those championships. I mean, they're one of the main events. They're a legitimate main event match. Chris Jericho and Edge was like one or two before the last match back a few years ago at WrestleMania. That was for the World Heavyweight Championship. I believe it was 2010, if I'm not mistaken, 2010 when Kane won the Money in the Bank match. Yes, it was 2010 was the last time that the World Heavyweight Championship was defended as a main event match. And so we're talking 3 years here. Horrible, horrible, horrible. The World Heavyweight Championship must be revived, and Alberto Del Rio is doing nothing to help that. Real quick, before we bring Derek Caldwell, correspondent, on the air, Daniel Bryan versus Big Show. Big Show tried to get out the match throughout the whole night. They fought for a period of time. The Show tried to walk out. But Triple H and the Shield appears. Shield powerbomb, triple powerbombs Daniel Bryan. Triple H forces Big Show to KO punch Daniel Bryan. Show refuses. He walks out, but he's stopped by Stephanie McMahon, who goads him back into the ring, and eventually he does KO punch Daniel Bryan. Then Orton comes out, and he poses atop of a KO'd Daniel Bryan. Again, I've talked about Big Show crying so much. I don't think I have to go further into that. Can't stand the Big Show crying so much, and this definitely does not help at all what we saw on Raw. And our Raw correspondent, Derek, is on the line. He's going to let us know his perspective on Raw, including the crying Daniel Bryan and the CM Punk promo and the rest of the show. Let us know what you got today, sir.
Well, what I've got tonight, hello everybody, Pancake and Power Slams, this is Derek, your Raw correspondent. I think, Chris, you need to show a little more compassion for the Big Show. I mean, come on. He might be 7 foot tall, but he's a cuddly teddy bear. And it made me sick. I'm with you on that. Horribly, horribly disgusting. Come on. I can't say what Chris already hadn't said. The dude's 7 foot, 500 pounds supposedly. He's not going to go out on TV and cry continuously over a 12-year span, however long he's been there. I mean, give me a break. It's unbelievable. It's ridiculous. It looks stupid. It's doing nothing for the WWE. It's doing nothing for the Big Show. It's just making them look like a complete moron. But anyway, 347-884-8452. Tell us your thoughts about Big Show. If it differs from ours, we want to hear what you think. Otherwise, the Big Show's a great guy. Triple H comes off. He starts off Raw with the Shield at ringside, announces RKO, comes out to the ring. They talk about how Bryan could possibly like the next cruiserweight. Good for him. That's pretty exciting if they ever bring the cruiserweight back. Daniel Bryan is way past that. And they also go as far as to compare him to a possible Doink the Clown. Rest in peace. But Bryan comes out, throws his words at him. Triple H makes the main event of Raw, Bryan and the Big Show. Okay, that sounds like a pretty decent match, so we'll continue with that here in a little bit. Backstage, Orton and Triple H run into Cody Rhodes. They chat with him. They seem kind of upset that they weren't invited to Cody Rhodes' wedding. And Triple H makes Cody put his career on the line against Orton. So that is actually, put his career on the line, yep. That's the way it went, and again, it didn't turn out very good for Cody Rhodes. Boy, the crowd really got behind him, though. Going a little further into Raw, continuing with the Orton-Cody Rhodes, it was a great match. It just went back and forth. It was an excellent, it's probably the best match on Raw, to tell you the truth. Crowd chants Cody, they're totally behind him. Of course, the RKO wins the match. Is Cody really gone from the WWE? Probably not. I think we all know it is his wedding. I mean, that's the main reason that he was in that match, because Triple H felt left out, that he wasn't invited. I'd invite Triple H to my wedding if I knew Triple H personally, so I guess I'd be hurt too. After that, Fandango versus The Miz. Miz with the figure four, another unnecessary loss for Fandango. I am a Fandango supporter, as everybody knows. Don't tell anybody outside of wrestling that I am, or else I'll probably get beat up somewhere. But us Fandango faithfuls have to stick together and know that there are greener pastures. The feud with The Miz, they kind of work well together. I wish it was more evenly matched. It wasn't Fandango just running out and, you know, acting like a fool. He does have potential, and Miz is somebody, a stepping stone that Fandango could use to really kind of put his career back onto where it was, wherever that was. So, a good feud. We'll see in the coming weeks what comes of it, if anything, what comes of Fandango, if anything, probably not. Dolph Ziggler versus Ryback. Of course, Ambrose attacked Ziggler before the match. And this, you know, Chris mentioned, this is going to be a really good match for Night of the Champions. Put Ziggler and Ambrose together. These are two stale wrestlers right now, absolutely stale in their position. This could kind of put a little shot of adrenaline. I've been saying that for a while. The Shield needs something. I mean, they're just pretty much drones now. They come out and just stand there and look ridiculous when they should be putting their titles up on the line. They should be more wrestling. They haven't wrestled in a while, and it just doesn't really seem that, you know, Monday Night Raw is the night everybody puts on their A-game. Not that SmackDown isn't, but Monday Night Raw is a premier show. Give it everything you've got. They come out and just stand there with their thumbs in their pockets. So it doesn't really make much sense why they're doing that. But again, Night of the Champions, I'm looking forward to this match, thinking it's something that could really help boost their careers a little bit, boost the hype behind them. I'll have a fan for that. They're both very potential athletes, and they have a lot that could be going for them. Hopefully this kind of kickstarts it. After that, we got Stephanie McMahon. She enters the ring and calls out Big Show. Claims that the Big Show is broke, needs money. She's forcing Show to wrestle Brian. You know, Stephanie had mentioned some pretty weird things as far as the Big Show was somebody backstage that she leaned on when she was 12 years old and all this, you're my hero, I always looked up to you like a big brother type of thing. There's only a few years apart from each other. Stephanie was 12, Big Show was probably 14 or 15. He wasn't wrestling at the time that I can remember. So that was kind of an ill-planned, at least for somebody like me and someone like Chris that knows better, that, you know, this just doesn't really add up. It was a good angle for Stephanie to throw out there, even though it was totally bogus. And, of course, Big Show, he keeps fumbling around. I don't want to do it. And he starts tearing up again. And eventually he does agree to go to the match. We'll go to that here shortly. 3MB versus Primetime Players. Again, Primetime Players win. They do have a lot of hype behind them from what's going outside of the squared circle as far as personal lives go. And, again, that's fine. I mean, go ahead, give them the push that they need. If they have to use this, it's kind of pathetic. Let's use the in-ring talent. But over 3MB, 3MB is kind of a throwaway tag team anyway. Nobody ask me 5 years from now, I'll probably barely remember who they are. So the tag team division that seemed to be doing well a few months back, it seemed like the tag team division was back, but now it's dead, mainly due to the fact that tag team champions don't put the belts on the line. They don't even wrestle. Do something about it. And I can almost piggyback on what Chris was saying, how the belts nowadays are, they're all, everybody's a paper champion. There are no real, true champions that you see anymore. The belts represented horribly. I mean, it doesn't matter if you have the belt anymore, it seems like, you know, big deal. You have the belt, next pay-per-view someone else has the belt, next pay-per-view someone else has the belt. It's enough, it's enough. It's been going on for a few years now. It's just been really stale. Let me get back to Monday Night Raw before I go on a huge tirade and end up being here at 2:30 in the morning. You know, Orton versus Cody Rhodes, already went over that. I mean, it was a great way for Cody Rhodes to leave. Randy Orton, I did have a little bit of steam behind him, but again, he's starting to go back and do his regular Randy Orton routine that he's been doing since he started. Again, he seems to get a great push, and then it just kind of goes stale. But we'll see when Cody Rhodes comes back, if he comes back. Again, he was fired. Anything can happen in the World Wrestling Entertainment. After that, you got CM Punk comes to the ring with the kendo stick, promises to break Curtis Axel's face. And that was a good line. Curtis Axel, he's a paper champion. He didn't deserve the title. He doesn't bring anything to it. There's no value to it. I might as well go out there and be Intercontinental Championship. And quite frankly, I'd probably do a better job. But on that, come on. CM Punk, he was champion for 400-some days. And now, like Chris was saying, Brock Lesnar, Curtis Axel. It does nothing for CM Punk other than to fuel the fire with, Paul Heyman. There's other ways you could do that, better ways you could do that. You know, Curtis Axel, I don't really have much to say. I mean, I miss Kurt Hennig so much. And what would he think about his boy today? Of course, he loves his son, I'm sure, but, you know, if instead of Paul Heyman, what if it was Kurt Hennig in Curtis Axel's corner? That would be an awesome father-son team, and that would go great with Dusty Rhodes against Cody Rhodes. Of course, that'll never happen, so I'm just talking out of thin air. Back to reality, Damian Sandow versus Rob Van Dam. Del Rio approaches the ramp. Sandow gets the benefit of it. Again, Sandow's not somebody I could see with the world title. Rob Van Dam, yes, I can see him with the title. I think he would be – he'd do a lot better job than Alberto Del Rio, and it would bring some prestige back to the title that goes back almost 100 years. And to have Alberto Del Rio still have that title is holding on to it. Doesn't really do anything. Doesn't do any justice. It's such a stalemate with these titles. It's driving me nuts. I'm a huge fan, Rob Van Dam. I'm glad he's back. He seems to still be kind of getting on a roll. He hasn't become totally stalemate yet. So keep that going. Damian Sandow, to me, he's just another throwaway, somebody to put in the ring. Not that he doesn't have any talent or anything, but not world title talent, no. And lastly, Brian versus the Show. Big Show has compassion for Brian again. Begs Brian not to make him hurt him. You know, Brian's out there trying to attack him, take him down. Big Show's pushing him away. I don't want to hurt you. I love you. Whatever that is. You know, he tries to leave. Triple H tells Show to get back in the ring. Shield beats up Brian. Triple H tells Show to knock out Daniel Bryan. Show walks away. Stephanie comes out to go to her old mentor, her old teddy bear, and walks Show back to the ring real nice, compassionately. And Show finally hits Brian. And what could have been a really great moment for Show to maybe have a heel turn, say, what's my problem, what am I doing? He just breaks down and sobs, and it's pathetic. RKO walks out, holds the belt over Brian, typical RKO fashion. I don't buy him being a champion. I don't think I ever really did. I mean, he's got the name, he's got the look. He does have in-ring talent, of course, but he's just so wishy-washy. He just, it's one week he's face, well, next week he's heel, vice versa next week. He just doesn't really have any staying prominent power to, he's not the answer. He's not the answer to the title. Daniel Bryan right now, yeah, he's the answer, I think. He can really do a lot with it. Again, just disgusted. Big Show, come on. Grow some. It's time to get up and be the monster that you are. I mean, you show glimpses of it, but then you revert back to your tiny little second grader sobby face. Enough is enough. Be done with it. I mean, it's almost to the point where you've pretty much almost ruined your reputation. Yeah, the Big Show. Remember when he cried? That's all he does. So stop that. Get it out. It's done. Don't do it anymore. WWE, come on. What are you trying to pull over on us? Again, you're just making the, bless me, the in-ring talent. You have the talent. You just don't know how to book it. You don't know how to make it to where Monday Night Raw was, you know, years ago when it was blowing up the Nielsen ratings. Come on. You've got the talent. Do something with the booking. Make it more interesting for Monday Night Raw and not just have all these paper champions walk out just because they have the belt. We have to pay attention to them and buy the merchandise. No. I bought Stone Cold's merchandise because I believed in his product. I bought The Rock's merchandise because I believed in his product. I'm not going to buy an RKO t-shirt. I don't want one. Daniel Bryan, I could see that. That's not so much my style anymore. But, again, give us somebody that we can get behind and really believe in, not somebody that we can believe in, but he gets beat up all the time. It's ridiculous. Drives me nuts. I need to go out and scream at something. So back to you, Chris. This is Derek the Raw Correspondent. I will be back on for the Flavor of the Week here shortly, so stay tuned. Log in, chat room, tweet, 347-884-8452. Tell us we're right. Argue with us. Tell us we're wrong. We want your opinions. We want your support. Keep Pancakes and Power Slams going. See you later.
Fantastic as always, Derek the Raw Correspondent. Yes, keep Pancakes and Power Slams on the air. 75 episodes. 75 episodes. Derek really showed how he really feels, and I think that's the passion that you heard really just kind of resonates throughout, I believe, a lot of the WWE universe as far as what we believe. All right, real quick, we're going to do this real quick. Like I said, every week there's a SmackDown and an Impact Wrestling columns that I do, articles that I do on WrestlingInc.com. So check them out on as far as the Impact Wrestling. It's really fun. I really try to make it really media friendly and just, you know, social media heavy. I put a lot of tweets on there, touts and Instagram pictures and things like that. So check out the Impact Wrestling Review, SmackDown Review, every week, wrestling.com. So we're going to zoom past the SmackDown and Impact Wrestling so we can get on with the Flavor of the Week. We're against the clock, so let's go. Miz TV, Big Show and Dolph Ziggler, interrupted by Triple H, books Miz and versus Orton and Ziggler versus Shield. Randy Orton defeats The Miz. Orton and Shield attacks Miz post-match. Daniel Bryan with the chair makes a save. RVD defeats Damian Sandow again. Alberto Del Rio appears on stage and cuts the promo. The Shield defeats Dolph Ziggler, teases Big Show sitting at ringside and powerbombs Dolph Ziggler post-match. Curtis Axel, Paul Heyman in ring promo. Roman Harper defeats Tons of Funk. Bray Wyatt gives Tensai Sister Abigail finisher post-match. Daniel Bryan defeats Ryback for disqualification. Interference by Orton and Shield. Big Show comes in the ring. They're forced to go to the back by Triple H. Orton and Shield continue to attack Daniel Bryan, and Daniel Bryan gets powerbombed, and Orton pays a homage to the NWO by spray-painting No on Daniel Bryan. Impact Wrestling, Bully Ray and Aces and Eights promo. Dissension between Bully Ray and Mr. Anderson over Tito Ortiz receiving Devon's old cut. Bully Ray just bashes Devon. Jeff Hardy defeats Kazarian. ODV defeats Gail Kim. 2 out of 3 falls for number one contender for Knockouts title. Main Event Mafia cuts an in-ring promo, thanking AJ Styles. Styles comes out. He actually beat in a ring alone and cuts just one of the most awkward promos. It was supposed to be a pipe bomb promo. It was supposed to be a shoot. It seems like it was a work shoot. It seemed like there was some legitimacy to it. But check out the Impact Wrestling Review. I go further into that. But it was just a bad, bad promo. Bad promo. Very bad. AJ Styles defeats Bobby Roode. Austin Aries defeats Christopher Daniels. Hulk Hogan and Bully Ray exchange words in ring, and then Hogan schedules matches next week versus Sting. He said he's going to defend the title, but Sting's not allowed. They clear that up on Twitter. And then in 2 weeks against a fellow Aces and Eights member, Sting comes out, they fight, and Sting gets an advantage. We're going to get the Flavor of the Week started. Before that, we're going to get Ring of Honor real quick. Basically, Brian Fury, who won the television championship number one contenders match, goes against the television champion, loses. He loses to Matt Taven. And also, there were a couple of the tournament matches. Karl Anderson, one of my favorite international wrestlers. Well, he's from the States, but he wrestles in Japan mostly. The Machine Gun Carl Anderson defeats ACH to advance. And, of course, Adam Cole advanced by using Mark Briscoe's brother's own move against him, the J-Driller. So that was pretty interesting. I was hoping that Mark Briscoe won, but for some reason, the Briscoes and ROH isn't on the best of terms, and I suppose that they maybe don't want the Briscoes to represent the company right now. So let's go to the flavor of the week. We've got about a good 10 minutes left, so we're going to do part two of the NWO thumbs up or thumbs down. Start off with Scott Norton. I'm going to give Scott Norton a thumbs up. I think that he was kind of floundering in the mid-card, and he teamed up with Ice Train for a second. It was an odd team. But he found his niche in the NWO. Real big guy, had some AWA experience. And I think that he was around for a while, really got a chance to make himself known in the NWO. Really worked out for him. So I'll give Scott Norton a thumbs up.
Yeah, I'll give Scott Norton a thumbs up, too. I mean, he was a pretty good, what I would call like a henchman for the NWO. And he was a decent mid-carder himself. He had some great feuds going. But the NWO really brought out, like I said, just that henchman style. He was never going to be a lead guy in the NWO. We all know that. Just based on his past, just what he's capable of. But Scott Norton, really, he made a great impact on the NWO. And I do remember Scott Norton as an NWO member as far as, you know, Scott Norton. That's the first thing that pops in my head. So, yeah, I'd give him a thumbs up. He was a decent member of the group.
Next, we have Randy Savage. Randy Savage has kind of broken the NWO a little shortly after. I definitely think that they did a decent job with Randy Savage in the NWO. I'm on the fence with Randy Savage in the NWO. At that point in time, I think they were just kind of abundantly just throwing main eventers in there. I think I'm going to give Savage a thumbs down from the NWO. He really didn't do much. I mean, he made a presence a little bit. He had one of the best feuds against DDP during that time. But all in all, I don't really think that he was the best NWO member. So, of course, you brought that main event presence to it, but him and Hogan didn't really see eye to eye. There was some dissension. And it seemed like they were forced to like each other. Just Hogan and Savage, both in the NWO, just didn't really do much to me. And I think that Savage could have been a heel aside the NWO if he would page. But he didn't need the NWO. So I'm gonna barely give Savage a thumbs down for the NWO.
Barely give Savage a thumbs down for the NWO. Well, that's one only time I'm going to say, yeah, thumbs down for Savage. I have nothing against him. It didn't really make like a right fit. I mean, he looked great in the NWO t-shirt, don't get me wrong, and I liked his tights and everything with it. But you just don't think of Savage with the NWO. And like you were saying, this kind of seems like they're just throwing in, at that time, former WWE wrestlers that made their name in WWE, and now we're this upstart NWO company, we're taking over. So, yeah, it didn't fit well for Savage. I would give him a thumbs down as well. I don't like to say that in the same sentence with Savage. However, it wasn't a very good fit. He did have a great feud with DDP, but didn't. I don't really remember him being in the NWO for that long, actually. I could be wrong, but. So, yeah, thumbs down, Macho Madness, not so much for the NWO. It was a good name to be with the NWO, but just didn't really fit his style.
Next we have Dennis Rodman, kind of tagged along with Hulk Hogan to be a member of the NWO. I saw the benefit in this, but as far as an NWO member, I'll pass. Thumbs down.
Yeah, thumbs down. It depends how you kind of go with it. He was good. I mean, he was a basketball star. He was awesome. He was at that time with the Chicago Bulls. I mean, he brought a good presence as far as celebrity wise to wrestling at the time. Understand why they did it. The name Rodzilla, that was decent. But, I mean, as far as just him being a member, he didn't really do much other than just his name and his presence, being a successful athlete that he was at the time. It thumbs down. Yeah, I mean, it was ridiculous. It was good for show, but at the end of the day, it was nothing memorable.
Great Muta. One of the best Japanese wrestlers to ever come to the States. However, thumbs down. To me, it was not really much of a point for them to be the NWO. I understand that they kind of branched off when they didn't. They did branch off to a whole NWO Japan entity with Masa Chono and Buff Bagwell going over there, the Fake Sting, and all those people being a part of NWO Japan. To me, it was overkill. I know that Eric Bischoff got the concept from Japan, he kind of took the concept from some things they were doing over there. But to take the whole NWO faction to go to Japan, no. And I think the Great Muta was not a beneficial member of the NWO. Thumbs down for me.
Yeah, absolutely not. Yeah, Great Muta again, great Japanese wrestler. But the whole NWO, I mean, they were supposed to be outlaws. You know, they were rebels. Great Muta just didn't have that in him. He just didn't fit the crowd. It was a total mismatch. I don't know, Bischoff trying to pay homage to stealing the idea from Japan. No, it was a throwaway. It was one of the dumbest things the NWO did. And he doesn't have that outlaw rebellious thing to him. I mean, he's an awesome performer, and that's what he goes by. That's who he is. NWO, no, thumbs down.
Next, we have Conan. I'm on the fence with Conan because I understand that, you know, he was in AAA, he had the mask, he feuded with Flair in 96 for the U.S. title. They're really giving him a decent spot. He turns heel and joins NWO not too far away from that. This is tough for me. I know we're pressing time, so if I had to choose, I would barely say thumbs. I'm gonna say thumbs up for Conan because it really helped his career, and it really kind of added a kind of international feel to the NWO. And that's why I barely give him a thumbs up.
I give him a big thumbs down. I didn't see it. One thing I remember about Conan more than anything, more than his in-ring work, which I can't really think much of, was he had some music video that they used to air at least 4 or 5 times during Nitro. It was like after every commercial break, oh, here's a new video from Conan. It was dumb. I didn't buy into it. It was a disgrace. I thought that was almost as bad as having Great mood in there. I can see what you're saying, international standpoint, to bring him in there. He kind of fit the outlaw thing that I was talking about earlier, but again, when I think of Conan, all I can think of is that music video and nothing else. So thumbs down, big thumbs down.
Next we have Curt Hennig. As a mid-carder, he turned on the Horseman. We've got about a few minutes here. Turn on the Horseman. I understand it. You know what? Barely, I'll give him a thumbs up. I'll give Hennig a thumbs up to be in the NWO because this was overkill time. I wasn't a big fan of just throwing everybody in the NWO and ended up branching to the Wolfpack a little bit around this time. But I will say that he was a good addition to the NWO. A thumbs up for me.
Yeah, I agree. Thumbs up. I mean, what can you say about someone who's in Four Horsemen, the most prestigious, stable of all time, and just totally turn on them to join the NWO? I mean, it was a sneaky move on his part, not a very popular one. Well, actually, it wasn't popular. I mean, he got a lot of heat for it, and I wouldn't say turned the tide for the NWO, but he was a great member. I enjoyed the time he was there. I enjoy anything Kurt Hennig pretty much did as far as, you know, wrestling and everything. So to turn on the Four Horsemen, a prestigious group like that, and then just to join the NWO, that just screams total outlaw, what they were wanting, what they were trying to accomplish with that. Not that the Four Horsemen were outlaws, but just to just desecrate the honorable Four Horsemen to join the NWO, that's NWO attitude right there. So I say big thumbs up.
Okay, a few more names left in a couple minutes. We got Rick Rude. I'm going to say thumbs down just because he didn't have much time, didn't really have much contribution to the NWO. Thumbs down for me.
Yeah, thumbs down. I don't really remember much of him being in the NWO, actually. He was with DX for a while, at WWE, and then left them, shows up on WCW, NWO, and it didn't make much sense. Again, I don't really remember too much of it, just vaguely remember that he left WWE to go to WCW for all that. So, yeah, thumbs down. Didn't make sense.
Dusty Rhodes, absolutely thumbs down. Made no sense. Heel turn. Everybody was trying to get in the NWO at that time. Absolute thumbs down for Dusty Rhodes. He's one of my top three favorites of all time, but had no place in the NWO. Total thumbs down.
Yeah, thumbs down. He said everything. That didn't make sense. There was no point from the being there. Somebody, a legend like him, keep him with what he's doing. You don't need to change his character. You don't need to change what he's doing. I mean, he's Dusty Rhodes. That's it. Thumbs down. It was a horrible decision.
Let's go Brian Adams. Again, no purpose. It didn't make sense. Thumbs down.
Yeah, thumbs down. Brian Adams. Again, I don't really remember him much outside of Crush.
So. Yeah. Lastly, we got Scott Steiner. Now, Scott Steiner, we're going to end this on a good note. I think this was one of Scott Steiner's best decisions to ever make in his career. Total thumbs up for the NWO. Really honed in his heel character, and he did a fantastic job for the entity. Give me a good 30 seconds, Derek, of your thumbs up or thumbs down with Scott Steiner. Let's do it.
Thumbs up. Big Papa Pump. That was an awesome fit for him. And it just propelled his career to he could go on to do pretty much anything. With the whole mesh thing over his head and everything, metal, he fit the character so well. Out there flexing his arm. I mean, arms you've never seen since, Big Papa Pump. Great time in NWO. I mean, he was successful. Made perfect sense to be in the group. I mean, he was an ultimate enforcer for that group. So, a big, big thumbs up for Big Papa Pump. Scott Steiner, holler if you hear me.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Derek. Tweet at Crave Wrestling. Follow Crave Wrestling on Twitter, WrestlingInc.com, BleacherReport.com. Next week we'll talk about thumbs up or thumbs down for the Nation of Domination. Until then, have a great week. Enjoy your week of wrestling, and God bless. Goodbye.